Well, I think we have one wild card line open for Marjorie Wildcraft, or a Wildcraft line, we could even call it too. Grab one while you can. All the other lines are jammed. We'll try and get one open for you so you can get in on this conversation. What you need to know in order for you to eventually become a self-sustaining farmer. How do you see your future, and what can she tell you to get from point A to point beyond next on Coast to Coast? This is Ian Ponet. So all I can say is we hope we've got all the technical problems worked out enough that we can go forward from here with Marjorie Wildcraft, who is hanging on for Jonathan west of the Rockies in New Mexico on Coast to Coast. Jonathan?
Hey there, Ian and Marjorie. Quite a while ago, I'd say, probably 1999, I was in a bookstore and just happened to cross an aisle on a Native American cultural books and, you know, thumbing through some books, and you know, I found that I was quite interested in making your own bows and arrows, and I actually haven't quite gotten fully into that yet, and even after all this time. But you know, for the longest time, I was saying, "Oh, that'd be a good hobby," and then it kind of extended into thinking about, you know, primitive living, and I've come to the conclusion that you know, a mix of both farming, even just a small, like Marjorie was talking about, a small field. Mixed with some hunting and gathering wild plants would probably be a good way to live. Unfortunately, I've actually went back to school for another degree in 2008. I'm getting close to finishing up, but is it possible to really actually learn this stuff and fit that in with a busy work and school schedule?
Yeah, I would say it is, and it requires focus. You know, it's going to be sacrificing episodes of friends or whatever else it is that you're normally involved with, and recognizing that this is your new hobby. But the primitive skills I find are unbelievably healing to, and I'll use the root chakra terminology. It's unbelievably healing to your sense of security. To be able to make a bow and arrow and to hunt that way, or to be able to make fire by friction just using sticks. On the other hand, being able to use firearms and hunt is going to get you up to speed and be able to get you meat a lot more quickly than archery. And I feel that we're so close to where we're on the cusp of a huge food crisis. At this point in time, time is of the essence. So, you know, learning to grow food and learning to hunt as effectively as possible. And absolutely, hunting, you know, for sure, and learning to wildcraft, learning your wild edible plants. As I've mentioned before, acorns or, you know, there you are in New Mexico and you've got lots of, you know, the cholla fruits and the prickly pear and mesquite beans, and learning how to use those and learning how to cook them in a way that's palatable to you. You know, there's a big difference between what's edible and what's palatable.
Very good. Thank you, Jonathan. We've got a couple of people who are going to be hanging on. Good luck with that. By the way, Marjorie, I think that was a Valiant pop culture reference, but just, you know, Friends went off the air in 2004.
I'm not much of a television watcher, obviously.
I know. I thought I could tell you were really trying on that one. I was good. But first time caller line, Matt is in Maryland on Coast to Coast. Matt? He's gone. Robin in the Bay Area on a wild card line on Coast to Coast for Marjorie Wildcraft. Well, there's a Charles in Berkeley. Let me try that.
Yes.
What's that?
Thank you so much.
Oh, there you go.
Marjorie, this is really wonderful. You're on the air. Thanks, Ian, for having this topic. I've been working with a group of folks here in California for a number of years. We're kind of going in the other direction, but I wanted to see where this might intersect with your ideas. We've been working on probably one of the most high-tech hydroponic systems that's ever been developed, in my opinion. Our goal was to produce as much food as possible with as little surface area as possible with a fixed water supply. We actually have scientists from Israel, former chemists from NASA. We have a whole group of folks from UC Davis and also a group from France, and they're all sort of combined their technical and scientific talents to come up with this sort of modular system. And these things have actually been used in various parts of the world, especially where environmental conditions are really challenging. So my thought would be, and by the way, I really like the idea that community is going to be the trick to this, because our vision is groups of families or small areas, you know, where you might have like a collection of towns that sort of share and exchange their food crops. And our big test was to see if we could grow enough food on the roof of an apartment building to not only feed everybody in the building, but actually have surplus that they could trade to other apartments. That was kind of one of our visions. So I was just kind of wondering, do you see, is this something that you're interested in, or do you see this as part of a larger array of systems that you might incorporate into your vision about, you know, food being the commodity of the future?
Right. I think that that urban environment of you just taking these abandoned factories, you know, these 6 or 7 story high factory buildings and turning those into hydroponic farms, et cetera. What do you think of that, Marjorie?
I think that we should be focusing on any area we can where we're growing food. And like in Detroit, where they're talking about bulldozing those old neighborhoods that are all now foreclosed upon and turning those back into farmland or the aquaponics or hydroponics. One of my concerns with going into higher technology, and one of the reasons I haven't personally pursued that a lot, is the potential for EMP, electromagnetic pulse, to, you know, destroy all the electronics on Earth, or a judicious use of a nuclear bomb to again have a similar effect of wiping out all the technology. You know, you may not have that deep a concern about that dire of a consequence. I also really like things that are simple and very primitive and something that anybody could do because it's, you know, stuff you can find on the ground or in your neighborhood. And I certainly applaud, you know, because there needs to be solutions for urban environments. Half of our population lives in urban environments, and we need to do something. Not everybody's going to be able to move out to the countryside, so we need to look at all the solutions we can. By the way, were you able to produce enough food for everybody in the apartment complex? I'd be very surprised if you were. Those kind of yields are phenomenal, but have you done that?
I'm afraid he's already gone. So, but I think that's an interesting question. And even as an experiment, to be able to be down that road, even if you can't get it for everybody all at once, you know, perfection, you know, perfect is the enemy of the good in one sense. You just got to always keep moving the ball forward and see what you can learn, I think.
Yeah, experimentation and learning. Let's go for it. Yeah.
East of the Rockies, John is in Lamont, Pennsylvania, on Coast to Coast for Marjorie Wildcraft. John?
Good evening, Ian. Marjorie, hey, I just wanted to bring something up when you mentioned about corn not being used for ethanol production. It's too important for food a little while ago. There are a couple of things I wanted to mention along with that is kind of bothersome, hasn't seemed to take off for at least as far as somebody to study it far enough to either refute or support the claim. But I'd like to mention involving a couple of different guests on Coast to Coast. First of all, Howard Bloom. A couple of years ago, George Norrie sort of commissioned him to look into what was happening with the corn prices at the time that were shooting sky high. And he found that, as I'm looking at this here, it's June 4th, 2008, that Howard Bloom was on in the third hour talking about this. He found that OPEC had bought up a huge share of futures in corn on the commodities market, and that they had, it was just a spectacular amount that they had purchased in order to drive the price up that time to scare people out of using corn for ethanol. And apparently in a lot of areas that worked. The other thing is corn is not a very good feedstock for ethanol production to begin with. I know David Bloom has been a guest on here as well that talks about some other crops that are much better suited to producing alcohol, ethanol, that can produce larger capacity, you know, many, many times more gallons per acre than corn ever could. But if you're going to use corn, there is also, I've seen some research apparently that if you make the ethanol with the corn first, the mash that is left over is still good feed for cattle, for livestock. And that if you make sure that you, you know, take the starch out of it and use it for ethanol production first, you're left with a higher protein feed. And that it can actually make it better, make it more beneficial for cattle.
Okay. Well, let's get a question or something in here for Marjorie. So was there something in particular you wanted to ask about that?
I guess not, though, just make her aware of it, see if she's known anything about it, and I'd really like it if she or someone else could, you know, look into this further. I mean, I know that's not something you're going to do tonight, but to either confirm or deny the what okay. Howard Bloom found out about that. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, the whole ethanol thing is, and yeah, I'm well aware that they do use the leftovers of the ethanol to feed and make it a livestock feed. But the whole ethanol process is fundamentally inefficient. You know, you're using this vast amounts of fossil fuel to grow corn to turn it into, you know, ethanol. It just fundamentally isn't an efficient process, even if you then, again, later turn it on to feed. And they probably used corn because corn is so massively grown and it's so easily a mechanized crop that we can produce. That's probably why they wanted to use it for ethanol. You know, the whole ethanol thing is crazy, in my opinion. I don't know why we're doing that, but and there's lots of... Yeah.
Well, the original idea was just that we could finally be independent, obviously, of the Middle East and of that of that type of oil. So, I mean, I get the idea of how that started. I agree with you. It's unrealistic and it doesn't make any sense in a world where there is food shortages to be taking food and turning that into that, where you could have other things like hemp, which is a much better product for that anyway. And you would still have byproducts from hemp, and you're not taking, you know, hemp out of the mouths of other people in order to turn it into fuel. But all right, let's go to Joy on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Joy?
Hi there, Marjorie and Ian. I've talked to you before, Ian. You had a wonderful guy who came on about dirt.
Ah, good. Yes. Well, glad to have you back. And I could see your what it takes to get you to call, dirt or farming. I'll put you down in that category.
Well, I'm on a cooperative in California. We have 10 households here. We are attempting permaculture as best we can do it because it's a little bit difficult. It doesn't always work that well when you live in a mountain valley. And I was looking at Marjorie's okay. website, and we raise alpacas. We do the whole composting thing with the alpaca manure. We get the red worms and we turn it into worm compost.
Just so you know, I'm out again.
What? I'm sorry?
And I'm not sure what's happened.
You're out. Marjorie, are you there?
I can.
There you go.
I can hear you fine. Yeah.
You can hear. Go ahead then.
Marjorie, I had a question about Lucena.
Ah, yes, Lucena.
Yeah, because I'd heard about that years ago, and it's helping to reforest the rainforest.
Just to let people know what we're talking about, Lucena is a tropical plant that's a very fast-growing tree, and you can use it in areas where it gets cold, but not too far north. I'd say, you know, north of Dallas, it would be very difficult, that sort of latitude. Oh. But, of course, on the California coast where it's a lot warmer and you don't have very hard freezes in the winter. But it's a wonderful, fast-growing tree, and I use it here in Central Texas extensively.
We had snow last night.
Well, you know, if you have a 6 month growing season or longer, then you can use Lucena, and it's got a high protein leaves that you can feed to livestock. The beans are edible for humans. It makes a huge amount of biomass. You can also use the wood. I use the wood for kindling and for carving and for steaks and all sorts of things in the garden. And it's also a legume, so that means it naturally has that symbiotic relationship to develop nitrogen in the soil to help enrich your soil. And Lucena is an incredible plant. It's very drought hardy. There's all different kind of varieties. So it'd be wonderful throughout you know, the southern parts of the United States and then the coastal areas where it doesn't get too cold.
And is that helpful for you? Thank you. Let's go to Mike on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Mike?
Hi, Marjorie and Ian.
Yep, can hear you fine. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, what got me to call tonight, and I'm really excited about the topic of the show, is what I think about quite a bit, is do I need a gun to garden? And practicing and thinking about new societies. And basically what I envisioned, I'm kind of a hobbyist philosopher on this, so I envision instead of like Democrat-Republican society based on like a soldier-citizen sage, you know, kind of like a farmer, a thinker, and, you know, kind of like an, you know, a deep thinker and a soldier. And also, I was going to see what you thought about something like that, what it would take to buy into something like that, and what she thought about as far as what gun she was thinking about is using as a standard. Because I always thought the 410 was the way to go for people who lived up these societies, just because the different amounts of ammo, and it's more like geared towards citizens and farming, but can be used for self-defense.
Okay. Well, Marjorie, where are you on that?
Well, my real short take on guns, and the thing I've noticed about most gun people is they're highly opinionated, so you're going to hear all kinds of things, and I found them to be very helpful. So where we're at with it is the 12-gauge shotgun is the most versatile weapon out there, and if you're going to have one thing, that's probably it, a short barrel 12-gauge shotgun, short barrel, so you can maneuver around your house with it easily. You can do everything from birdshot to, you know, buckshot to a slug, and it has a whole versatility of loads. It's kind of got a big kick for a woman, so I tend to use the lighter loads. The other thing, the 22 long rifle, it's a smaller round, but it's an excellent all-around weapon for all sorts of things. It's cheap, and the ammo is cheap. And the other thing is a 9mm handgun. Half of all handguns made are 9mm. And the reason that I'm settling on these type of calibers is if you go into a small little general store anywhere, if they're going to have any ammunition at all, it'll be 12-gauge, 9mm, and 22 long rifle. Those are like the most common rounds. I suppose 308 is another one that some of the hunters use. You know, the weapons thing, there's such a diversity and array. I mean, I really strongly recommend everybody go to a gun show. It's an amazing experience and probably give you a real sense of what, you know, markets in the future will look like.
it's right.
Really, yeah, it's amazing.
The greater thought he had, too, there, sort of he had his own vision, and I think it's fair to say, you know, as the old expression goes, describe to me what you think God is, and I'll tell you who you are. His vision of what that future might be would be based a little bit more on the intellectual side, that they would be giving credence to the sages, etc., and that there would be a place for that in the future. Any thought on that?
Well, I think everybody's going to need to be growing food and probably dealing with security. And I you know, we have the luxury right now of having PhDs and lots of thinkers. And I think that a whole lot less is going to be going on with that. Certainly, people with good libraries and access to information are going to be valuable. But I you know, I don't think we're going to have a lot of time to sit around and think. There's going to be a lot more work going on, a lot more growing food, you know, a lot more checking perimeters and boundaries, a lot more taking care of livestock or taking care of family or working within the community to deal with, you know, imminent issues. So, you know, I don't think we're going to have a lot of luxury for PhDs anymore or a lot of, you know, it's certainly going to be valuable. But I don't think a community can support somebody just to think about things.
The future as you see it, if you have a question for how you think you might fit into it or what you need to know more about this type of farming and or cattle raising or chicken raising, then this is the woman to ask. We'll get an open line for you coming up as fast as we can. Just go ahead, stand by. We'll give you the numbers or you can go online and you can link up to Marjorie Wildcraft's DVD and get the tutorial that way on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. Well, we got a full boat of calls. We'll try to get everybody on and also if we can get a line for you, but I don't know how we're going to get through everybody here unless we hustle between now and the top of the hour. If you missed the first hour of the show, you missed Cy Kernan from The Fix. He was talking about sustaining farming. Actually, we got into the question about, do you need a gun to garden? His answer to that was not in his case, although he used gun for wild game in France, rural France, where he farms now. Raising goats and making his own cheese, etc. But he did say, you know, that it would be almost impossible to be able to keep people out if enough of them wanted what you had. So putting that aside for the moment, regardless of how we think about security or for protection, we should be thinking about what more we can do to take care of ourselves and not be dependent on systems, be they the simple food systems that, you know, may or may not run out after just a couple of days should there be a national emergency. Not bad to think about how you would get by on your own. Go find out more by linking up to Marjorie Wildcraft at coasttocoastam.com. And if you get a chance, join Coast Insider and go back and listen to that first hour with Cy Kernan from The Fix on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. Let's start with the Skype line where we left off with Julio from Illinois on Coast to Coast for Marjorie Wildcraft. Julio?
Good morning to you both. Marjorie, two quick questions. I'll be brief. First off, you talk about alternatives to dentist on your website. Can you explain a little bit more any alternatives to get away from the sodium fluoride and other nasty chemicals in our toothpaste? And secondly, I'm a senior in college. I'm getting ready to graduate. What could a person like me do with little funds to get myself prepared? And do you think, should I start off with...
This is turning into three questions. We don't have that much
time.
Okay, go ahead.
Food.
All right, so Julio's question about dentistry. Go ahead.
Great. We're going to have Doug Simons out in May coming to Texas, and he'll be doing a workshop on how to do everything you need to do from cleaning your teeth to handling an abscessed tooth. We're going to be videoing that and making it available for folks that can't come to Texas. So that'll be available, and then Doug will be marketing it, so it'll be available. This guy lived in the wilderness for 20 years and has learned some amazing things. The second thing is start learning to grow food. Go hang out with gardeners, gardening clubs, 4-H. You know, your future, you will be much happier if you know how to grow food in the coming years. That's going to be the most important skill.
That'll be a good way to get started off in your new life. Let's go to the international line. Alex is in Toronto on Coast to Coast. Alex?
Hi. Okay, so I'm in Canada, and I have a large backyard.
Okay.
And every summer we have a large garden.
Put me in queue.
And so it's beautiful right now in the backyard, but everything's frozen. So my question is, when I grow things in the spring and summer, what are the things that I can grow that would be nutritional and will, say, dry well or freeze well for the winter months?
Yeah, that's a great topic. Squash is one of the best ones for preserving, but all of most all of your vegetables you can do something with. Tomatoes, you know, a survival garden is tomatoes, onions, and garlic. You can make anything else taste good with those three. And another quick thing you might not have thought about, a greenhouse is a very important component of growing food in any climate, and I was surprised even down in Central America they use it to keep the rain off the crops, but in every environment, a greenhouse is a real beneficial thing to have. I wish we had more time to go into that. And again, you know, I can't emphasize more, going to your local gardening clubs and hanging out there and finding out what people are growing and getting seeds that people have grown locally that are adapted to your area, excellent way to get started.
Very good. Brian's in Colorado, Wildcard Line on Coast to Coast for Marjorie Wildcraft. Brian?
Hello, Ian and Marjorie. First, I'd like to say I'm very grateful for the Coast staff, all the researchers, the producers, the phone people, the hosts, and the guests. Marjorie, I live in a little small town at 8,200 feet. There's a lot of wind. I live in an apartment, and I'm curious about window plants and also about mushrooms, and thanks a lot.
Yeah, excellent. Mushrooms are also another wonderful thing that you can do that don't require light. Sprouts are another thing you can do that don't require light. If you want to invest in a few lights to grow things with, wheatgrass is another wonderful thing to grow in a small, you know, apartment-style environment. And with the main thing about growing the wheatgrass is you can get an incredible nutritional boost. You can make yourself a multivitamin that's far superior than anything that's manufactured and do it for just pennies a day. And my emphasis here is just to get started. Get used to that habit of having to look at your plants every day and check whether they need moisture or whether they need light, learning what it looks like when they're unhappy, when they need something or another, and start developing those relationships. But there's a tremendous amount you can do in an apartment.
Yeah, start relationships with other people that are growing tomatoes and other people that are making their own cheese just so you'll have pizza. if nothing else. If you've got, if you're growing the mushrooms, somebody else might have the other ingredients. I'm all for that. Wildcard line, Roger's in California on Coast to Coast. Roger?
Yeah, hi. My question is about goats. I raise goats, and, you know, they double and triple over a short period of time. And the amount of milk that you get is absolutely incredible. I just think people need to get off the cow. The cows are very wasteful. They're hard to keep. They eat tons of food. A goat will give you three goats will give you as much as a cow, and they're much easier to take care of. I just can't believe in Western culture, you know, I guess more of American culture, people just don't know what a goat is and what they can produce. And I live in the mountains, and right now I've got like 3 foot of snow out there, and I go out and milk in the barn, and I've got 2 gallons a day coming in, even now, you know, it's an amazing right. food source.
I totally agree with you that goats are, they are a far superior animal because they eat a wider variety of browse. They eat all kinds of things that, that cattle don't eat. The one problem with goats is that they do eat everything, and if they aren't managed properly, I've seen so many people completely and utterly destroy their land very, very quickly with goats. So I do highly recommend goats, but make sure that you're rotating them and you're moving them around because they do destroy the land very quickly if they aren't managed properly. But when well managed, he's absolutely right, especially in tougher bioregions. The goats by far are going to be a much better productive animal, not only for the meat, but for the milk and for clothing, for the skins, tanning the hides and being able to make clothing, which is an issue that will be coming later on down the road.
Wildcard line, Rhonda is in Oregon on Coast to Coast. Rhonda?
Hi, I'm here. Yeah, Mark, I think it's great that you have this book going out, but before I get it, we started doing this 10 years ago. We plucked up ourselves up from the city and almost 11 years ago bought a farm. And it was based on the just-in-case factor. We don't know what's coming. But in your book, do you cover, like, wood stoves and alternative types of ways to store, to process this food we have?
Well, it's a DVD, just so you know, which makes it a little easier, too. Go ahead, Marjorie.
It's a DVD tutorial, basically, on how we do grow food in our area, and the principles are universal, so they apply everywhere. And it also includes a companion CD-ROM with documents that support the video. So, for example, we have a seed-saving book and how to make compost and, how to tan a hide and all sorts of things that accompany it. We did not get too much into the how do you heat your home or how to do your home type thing. We are mostly organized and focused on food production. Heating and all those questions, security, all those are certainly valid parts. But our focus and our felt that our most important thing was people would want to eat. There's lots of other resources out there available.
First-time caller line, Derek is in Kentucky on Coast to Coast for Marjorie Wildcraft. Derek?
How are you all?
Thank you. Couldn't be better. Go ahead.
Right. I have two questions. Do you think we'll have agriculture states like Kentucky, Nebraska, Idaho, et cetera, that will become more apt to be centers of community? And also, what manual tools would we need to have a self-sustaining farm?
Oh, I like that. Really good question.
Yeah. I think agriculture is going to get smaller because as the price of fuel goes up, those big mega farms in Iowa, Nebraska, that they're going to be harder and harder to run. They're obviously run by mega corporations now. But smaller and sustainable food areas, and definitely Kentucky and Tennessee, lots of small farms there. And those, very well may become centers of more sustainable agriculture. The basic tools, of course, you're going to be your shovel and your pitchfork and your rake and a good pocket knife. Those are the things that I'm always using. There's always an assortment, a gamut of tools, and that's a whole other conversation we can have. Buckets and fencing, there's a whole variety of things you need, wheelbarrows and that sort of thing. I don't know how to answer that one.
I think that's a good question. There should be just like a basic list of the top 30 things that you might need, and people could start, if they were interested, for birthday presents, for Christmas presents, to start the stock.
I think I'll put that list together and put that out on the website or one of our newsletters. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's go to west of the Rockies. Brenda is in Washington on Coast to Coast for Marjorie Wildcraft. Brenda?
Ian.
Brenda?
Yeah, I'm
can we
here.
Hear you? Go ahead.
I'm here. Hey, Marjorie, I'm a native Texan, but I'm living in Wenatchee, Washington now. So, hey, how's it going down there?
Texas is doing fine.
Okay. I just got a couple of things I wanted to mention real, real fast and then ask a question. I watched this movie the other day. It's called Food Incorporated. You can watch it on YouTube, and it was very informative. And if that's not enough reason for you to want to bake your own food, I don't know what would be. But anyway, I make my own wine. I just started doing this a couple years ago, and I do my own canning also. But I would like you to touch on a little bit about root cellar vegetables and also bartering. And also, I'm a retired nurse, and one of the things that I think people need to know is bleach is a very important thing that you need these days in case of something like this, because I used to work for a plastic surgeon, and we used bleach for a lot of different things that people are not aware of. It's pretty cheap, and you can store it for quite a while.
Okay. What would you use bleach for? Well, wait, real quickly, what would you use bleach for that you imagine we should have a stock of it?
Infections, mostly, like wounds and stuff like that. Like, she's talking about wounds and stuff, you know, if you want to call a doctor or whatever. I had a dog one time. This is pretty gory. But he got attacked by another dog, and the other dog chewed his, you know what, up, his private areas up. And I was in nursing school at the time, and I didn't have the money to take this dog to the vet. So I stuck my dog in the bathtub because I had worked for a plastic surgeon, and I knew about bleach. And I stuck him and soaked him in the bathtub twice a day.
Ow! Ow!
And I'm telling you, man,
ow,
that dog healed up like you would not believe.
I would not believe. But knowing that area getting chewed up and then pouring bleach on it,
bathtub of bleach water.
Yeah, that'll take care of it. I wish I had ear bleach. No, thank you. But I bet she's right. What about bleach as far as you're concerned?
Also for water, you know, for decontaminating water, it's an excellent chemical to use for that. Although, again, you know, I storing those chemicals are very useful. There's definitely a supply of, but I'm also into making sure that we have other ways to do that, using sand filters or other things to clean, or using, you know, different plants that are also excellent antibiotics and cleansing. But absolutely, and especially for transition years, having a supply of those kind of chemicals is on hand is an excellent idea.
Well, and bartering, she mentioned in there, too.
You know, already in our community, we're starting to do that, and you know, having a supply of things for bartering. You know, beans, bullets, and Band-Aids are the classic investment for hard times and collapse scenarios, so there's the basic idea. Nickels, surprisingly, are still probably some of the only honest money that's made by the U.S. government, and an excellent investment, even if you're on the smallest of budgets. They're three-quarters copper, 25% nickel, and the U.S. government is about to, the mint is about to switch over to a cheaper alloy. Right now, it costs them about 7.5 cents to make one, so immediately you're making about 50% return on your money. And then, of course, you know, anything, if she makes wine, that's also an excellent barter or trade item. You know?
There are a lot of people who really, that's all she has to make. She'll never go hungry. Let's see, who's east of the Rockies? Is that Mark in Hollywood, Florida, on Coast to Coast? Mark?
Yes, hi. Good evening. This has been a very interesting subject. What I wanted to ask the guest is, okay, I have some pre-existing conditions. I have high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and coronary heart disease. In the event that, like you say, our society were to break down and the pharmaceuticals are not around to give the medicines I need to live, would herbology or studying herbology in any books that are available be able to maybe address these conditions when I can't get my medicines no more?
Yeah, well, one, I'd say start adding, you know, extra supplies to where you have a backup supply of the medicine. And yes, there are for all of those items, and I don't have them on the top of my mind, but I've seen all sorts of herbal alternatives for all of those things, diabetes, high blood pressure, all sorts of treatments. And I would say start, you know, experimenting and incorporating and find what works for you. Maybe find a qualified herbalist and start looking for plants or things that grow around you locally that you can use. And also for anybody, as a part of preparing, is to start addressing health issues that you can heal up and clear right now before anything happens. You know, take care of your dental needs and start taking care of, you know, all sorts of injuries or things that you might have. Right. Clear them up now.
Last call is going to be from Patrick, and that's going to have to be it for tonight for Marjorie Wildcraft. The rest of that you're just going to have to take care of on your own by linking up to her through our website. Go ahead, Patrick.
Hey, non-lethal defenses for your garden. Have y'all looked at that? I mean, I'm a pro gun person, but you know, it's a lot harder to kill a person than it is an animal.
Yes, we do, and we have a whole section on the DVD about protecting. You're going to have, you know, everybody's going to want your food supply, the insects, the squirrels, the raccoons, of course, the two-leggeds, deer, and we do go into that in a lot of creative ways throughout the DVD. Insects are something that you can eat, believe it or not, and we use dogs a lot to protect from you know, other types of predators, raccoons and squirrels. And even in just a small backyard situation, I would still have a small dog who is up all night while I'm sleeping, taking care of running off those critters.
Right. Well, but I think he's talking more about, as you called them, the two-leggeds. When he says, what about non-lethal responses to human interest in one's garden?
Well, you know, anybody who comes up to me at first, if they're asking for help, I'm going to do everything I can to help them, you know. And that's, you know, the basic of, you know, if I've got seeds or skills or whatever, I'm going to do whatever I can to help. And only if they're demonstrating some sort of aggressive behavior that I can't handle do we ever want, you know, you certainly don't want to go right into lethal responses at all unless you absolutely need to.
Right. Well, but I think that's also something else to consider is in advance, is there something else that you can use that would keep people out of your area without having to resort to that? And it just might require a little brain power in advance.
One simple thing is just don't make it obvious what you're doing. You know,
right.
Have your garden in such a way that it's not visible from the road, or, you know, there's a stockpile of junk out in front of it so people don't suspect that there's something going on behind there. You know,
and if that fails, dozens of rabid poodles.
Yeah.
Why not?
Pink ones.
Yeah, pink ones. That'd be freaky. All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for putting up for the technical problems. The finest engineering minds couldn't work that out, but you were great to hang in there anyway, and everybody else too. And we look forward to hearing more about. We'll keep track on these grocery prices and. We look forward to continuing the conversations. Thank you, Marjorie. God bless you and your family. Deus te amat, and I do too.